back in our country, we had, Latvia was free a very short while in a way, but very proud and thought that the world is going around Latvia. We are the star in the middle. But the education was pushed, not exactly, but people did go to university, and every farmer who had money sent the boys to high university. But it came to almost to the point that there were more educated people than there were jobs in Latvia, because it was so small. So we had a coup one night. They just took over the government, and we were very patriotic, and they said the family names were from days when Germany was in our country, when the Russians were in our country, and they were not pure Latvians. So they said, why don't you change to Latvian names? My dad was Greenberg, meaning green hill, and there was nothing wrong with it, but we, of course, two teenage daughters, we were all, hopla, why not? We lived on by a Baltic Sea, and there was a little river, and my dad had fishing rights to the delta, a very tiny river, a stream. And we said, well, why not Grivniaks? And my dad's brother changed to Grauds, that was meaning a grain.
Dad, Janis Grivniaks, my mother's father, was a railway, working on the railway most of his working life, wasn't he, Mom?
When we were young, we had a wonderful childhood, and when Dad was telling about First World War, that you couldn't buy bread and the money you could carry in suitcase, but it wasn't any value to it, we were just listening, oh yeah, but it won't happen here. And then came days when it happened. And but we went to school, since my dad was working for the railway, and not everybody had horse and buggy, mostly train and in a city streetcar. And when I think back, we walked miles and miles without even thinking that why on earth we are walking. That was the way to get around. And summers were by the seashore. We lived only a few hundred yards away from the seashore. We sat on the beach all day and chatted with friends. We went in the woods to pick blueberries. We went to pick the mushrooms. Here I wouldn't pick one mushroom because I wouldn't recognize which is which, but there we had the poisonous too, but I don't know, we never managed to kill ourselves. Well, we had, our woods went as thick, and people got lost or children got lost. I never had our had beautiful woods you could walk through without in this one we lived in a railway owned little house. Yeah, two rooms. Train was up the embankment, not closer, I think, than even the retaining wall. It didn't bother us, and I don't know how my mother didn't get gray hair thinking with two little girls playing there at the bottom of it, but we never did. And we had a little barn, and there was a couple chickens. We had to walk to school, of course, everywhere you did walk, a couple kilometers or so. Looking back, it seems wonderful. We had to learn German from grade 3 all the way through high school. And in high school, we could pick either second language, English or French. I went to school where we had English, and I did better in English than in German. And then when the Russians came in, we had to take the Russian. I took Latin only 2 years for his work. He had to move. when I finished high school already, the Russians were already in our country. The war was ready to start, so you couldn't plan what you will do with your life. If you wanted to go to university, you had to join the youth parties. German later, the Russian later, the German. And then I just worked in an office. I didn't know how to type or nothing, but we had a big book, and I had to write in the incoming post and the outgoing, to whom and about what, in a couple sentences. I was born in Viesite. It was a little country town, but they didn't have a church. The church was at least 10 kilometers, so we never did go to the church. We joined the church in Riga. While the times were good, we have had our exams in school. Two girls were missing. One was, her father was a Baptist minister, and other was just a girl with her mother, single mother. They were taken to Siberia. We came out from the school. The streets were full with heavy trucks, with people with coats standing. They were packed pretty solid.
You know,
nobody knew how far they go, what's going on. Different. Then came the Germans. The war changed. The Germans were marching in. We did receive them very happy, because everybody had lost somebody to the Russians for one reason or another, and went on their own to join the German army. But later it was conscription, had to go. But if you didn't have something like that, you had to go. If you didn't go, I had a cousin who ran into somewhere and was hiding in the bush. They found him and put in jail. So either you went or you went to jail. We never found the truth out of it. When we left our country and we traveled through Latvia, we slept in barns. One night we slept in the bush. Definitely when the Russians came back in, we didn't want to stay. We were scared stiff, and we thought we have to get out to Germany, and from Germany at least the doors is open, you can try to get somewhere else. And we would have walked, but we couldn't walk nowhere too far, because the Russian army had marched through Lithuania, and there was no way. The road was cut to go straight to Germany. They were taking German soldiers who were retreating. They were taking us, everybody who, and we went by boat, and lucky we made it. Either you took a boat across to Sweden, what was a risky thing to do, or you got a boat other town, Liepāja, and there was only one railway line that went through, because the Russians were part of it, Latvian already. And so when we were driving, they gave a big long train. We were sitting in the train all day waiting for the evening. Then we got the engine and we took off towards Liepāja. I had only two dresses, and they weren't really shop bought dresses my mom made from some kind of. I had two dresses, and I had forgotten one back home. I was only with one dress. So my dad went back and got the dress, so I had two dresses. I had my one and only pair of shoes on. I took from my album all the photos out, except one that was the biggest from grad. And like I told them, when in Germany we had to run from bombs and things, I had my two dresses on. In one pocket I had all my pictures, and another I had the New Testament. Mm-hmm. Well, in the end, when we came back from Liepāja to our friend's place, it's in a watermill, a farmer, and my dad bought a horse and buggy, and he found us in Liepāja by fluke, that where we were. Our dad went to Liepāja knowing that we were aiming there, and we stayed in opera house in the back of the stage. We slept couple nights. There, every man for himself. There were lots of people, but everybody did mind their own business or worried about themselves. He found us there on the stage. We took the train back to the watermill. Nobody wanted to leave Latvia. We thought the war will be over and the Russians will be pushed back and we can go home. My dad and mom, they dug up the floor in one of the little barns and buried a little box. There were some books and my dad's trumpet. And I had violin, and Walda had the mandolin. They all were buried there because we thought it will take a month or two, and the Russians will be pushed back, and we will come back. Our things, we never went back because the war went on. The Russians weren't pushed back. They were there for good. And my dad was in army with his trumpet, and he knew that you can't have bread, can't find bread, and money doesn't buy nothing. And so they were, everything was closing up. The office where I worked, we were told, take it off, don't come back, and don't wait for extra ruling. My dad, since he was in charge about stretch of the railway, the bosses said, take off, don't stand around. We were driving, we were on the train, and there was one portion when either the track was damaged or it was too close to the Russians. The Germans have put a new track on without much caring how it is, and we were driving there at night. Everything was dark, the train was dark, the night was dark, and I told you could hear a pin drop because we could see there were the farms burning. We knew that the Russians are just maybe around the corner only. Nobody said a word till the came morning, and we were over the worst part. Then everybody started to talk and feel at home again. But no, that moment was, all we needed a Russian bomb to fall on the track and stop us for good. First time we went to the ship, there was the alarm. And our horse took off. It was old horse, but it got scared. Took off with all our luggage, what we had. There we were standing without a stitch on whatever we had. We did in the end, the previous day, we had stopped in one park where that was full with people trying to leave Latvia. And somebody suggested to my dad to go back and look if the horse isn't there. And sure enough, the horse was there.
Escape by boat.
The way we went, and thanks to my mother, she marked down some railway stations, the names, so we can follow the track where it went. It went almost straight towards Czechoslovakia. We could see the mountains at the horizon, and they took it. The train was long and full of people. Took us for, I don't know what's the right word, to make sure that we don't enter with the lice and some sickness or what. The huge tents, army tents. We slept on the floor. I don't know, that must have been some army. And next day, everybody was sent for a shower. Everybody took the clothes off, my mom and us girls. The Germans, I think they were nasty in a way. The guys who run the showers, turn the tap on and off, were Russian soldiers, little scared boys. My mom tried to put some soap on, and it ran out of the soap. Then the water trickled down. There was nothing. It was just a sham. And then next day, we were loaded again in the train and taken back to Breslau. They were all railway people. They divided who were the ones who had worked on the line, the ones who had worked the stations and offices. And we got a group that was going to Stotterheim. And Sarmide was left in Breslau because she was an office girl. And that's when we parted company with her. She later ended in Berlin. We went to the Stotterheim, and there we lived in a barracks. And we had a German supervisor, but he was a guy good. There were Poles, and like always, Germans didn't treat them Poles correctly. They had all the purple sign that with a P, you know. They knew who is who. We had, and the Poles, they were led to eat some, cut the tips of beets or something. They had poorer quality, the food, and they had scrounged.
Southwest along the horizon, you can see the mountains. In the district, you can see other villages with red roofs and church towers. The national food of Silesia that the people were eating is kohlrabi.
Yeah.
We didn't like that soup at all. Our living accommodations were the railway workers' barracks. The barracks were enclosed with barbed wire, 1 kilometer from the station and 0.5 kilometer from the railway tracks. In the camp, there were 800 people from different nationalities. Poles, Russians, Ukrainians were the biggest amount, and Lithuanians, Czechs, and later some Hungarians and Dutch. Of the Latvians, we were 6 families and 2 single fellows. We lived all in one room and slept in bunk beds. Our beds were in one corner. I and my husband slept downstairs, and our daughter slept upstairs. We put blankets along the sides of the beds to close off the rest of the room. In that corner, I felt very good. The room was quite clean. There were bugs, but we cleaned them steadily and managed somehow. For heating, we received a pail of coal a day. For our room, it wasn't enough, so when the menfolk were coming home from work, they put loose coals in their pocket they collected along the railway tracks. With the meals, we could manage. Sometimes the food wasn't to our taste. Sometimes it was quite cold, till it was brought to us from the community kitchen cooking pot. The bread was good. When we were short of bread, we would trade the flour from Latvia for more bread. Sometimes we could have cooked up something ourselves, but it was always quite a problem because there was no place to do the cooking. We tried to do some cooking on the sly in a kitchen that was only allowed for children and babies. The head of the camp, the Lagerführer, the German, was not too bad with the Latvians, but against the Russians and Poles, he behaved like a dog. Even us sometimes heard him yelling in our room if a chair wasn't put right or the blanket wasn't properly covering the bed. Wasn't allowed to sit on the bed with clothes on or to lie down. Everyone had to go to work on the railway. Between our men folk, we had a different kind of foreman. Everyone was working at keeping the line in working order. Women were picking rocks between the ties and filling them again to keep the ties level. When it was snowing, they had to clean the snow and clean the railway switches. There were 500 switches. From the women, only one was allowed to stay home that was over 50, and one mother with a baby. Mirza and Valda, being young, the work seemed much easier. Bigger problem was the cold, because there were no proper clothes or footwear. To make a point, the German foreman and the old Sigoban Otto were very sympathetic to us and helped us as much as they could, letting us warm up and rest in a warm place. For me and Mrs. Oswald, says it was very hard. We asked the top railway official if they would release us for health reasons, but he was a real German big shot and didn't want to hear about it at all. We had to go to Liegnitz to the railway doctor and ask us to allow us to do lighter work. I had to spend 8 days in Liegnitz learning how to dust phone switchboards. It takes quite a lot of care. I was almost crying, being afraid to walk between the electrics. Previously, I forgot to mention, we were under the auspices of UNRWA. Now, under IRO, the portions per person are very small. For a family without a working member, it is hard to survive. Lucky for us, my husband and Balder were working from the first day in Fulda. There has always been a little bit of money to buy something extra. We can be happy about our room. There are many people who have to live in poorer conditions. From 1946, there has been in camp 700 to 800 persons. The hope and despair about seeing our country free one day changes every day. All kinds of gossip comes and goes. For about a year, the emigration is on the way. Many people leave for North or South America, Canada or Australia. Many people are leaving in a hurry. Many are leaving because living in Germany is hard and not believing that our country will be free as soon. Single men and women are applying for emigration. Without work, it's not possible to stay in camp. For large families with children or old people, the chance to emigrate is very slim, even if they wish to. Nobody feels sorry for us, just looking for workers. My only wish is to see our country free so we can return. I have no wish to go overseas. This is not our country, but over there it will be even worse. My sister and husband are in England since June 1947. My brother and family left for Australia August 1948. What will become of us? Peter, that's my dad, and Mirza are afraid of a possible new war. They would like to go to Canada. Valda is saying, that's her sister, where Peter and Mirza go, I will follow. We old folks have to stand by and watch what happens and hope to follow them. I'm afraid to be left behind, neither here nor there. Or they go to Australia and we have the hard decision to follow or stay in Germany and hope soon Latvia will be free, but never see our children.
My dad, he was, because I think he was, virtually a veterinarian, qualified veterinarian, that gave him a bit of a break because he was treated special when he got to Germany. There was a veterinarian that recognized that he was a colleague almost and got him signed up at Leipzig. So it seems a bit odd to me. I mean, I can't even imagine it, a person being a student in 1944 in Germany, and yet he was, and Mom says that's because all the profs had nothing to do, right? All the German guys were in the army.
We came, single man came to Canada, work in the lumber industry, Northern Ontario, all that. Families.
In Halifax at Pier 21, they were taken on a train west, not knowing exactly where they were going to be getting off. They thought perhaps it might be Alberta, it might be BC, and they took them off in Lethbridge, and they worked in the sugar beet fields. Then at the end of the season, once the sugar beets were harvested, they went back east because there was no work. They went to Montreal, and someone heard that there was a young Latvian veterinarian in Montreal, and they sent his name to Guelph University saying, wouldn't it be good if we took him on as a student? And so my dad went as a postgraduate student for a year with this much English, but purely based on the kind-heartedness of someone who said, what a shame that this man's talent is not being used. The story was when they, by then your mom and dad were there working as domestics for a well-to-do family in Montreal. So they all clustered together and the grandparents, mom's family supported them. And they helped him and then,
Well, the professor was very immigrant friendly, Dr.
Yeah.
Schofield. Between while the beets were growing, the man had to do something. Dad went to work on a railway group. Dad's brother went to farmers to pick the rocks, stones of that were winter, but there, that time there was no industry, there was nothing to do. And we had one boy, and I was expecting Carl, and no apartment houses, just private homes. You couldn't get with a child in there, nobody wanted a racket. We had to write back to Germany to my mom and dad how we are and how we got here, and we didn't have a red cent in Canadian money to buy the stamp. So next door neighbor had a bull who had a big, had scratch in his tongue. He had a, and he had, that bull had a torn, and so they had heard that dad is wet, and they asked if he could come and pull the torn out. And dad went, pulled the torn out, and they wanted to pay, and dad said all he would like, enough for one stamp. I don't know exactly how much he got, but he got the money for the stamp, and that was the first letter to Germany we could write. And we wanted in many ways Canada, because we thought it will remind very much our country. Except we don't know, that didn't have the poplars, we had birch trees. Yes, English in school, but you know, if you're in school, you learn this is a pencil and this is a table and there is a house and there is a chimney. I remember all those pictures what we had in classroom. You come out here and completely you're lost. Mm-hmm. In Germany, after 5 years, I was never good. I could go and watch movies or read a book, but I couldn't talk because the grammar was so awful for my thinking. But here in Canada, I didn't care how I say. I thought if somebody wants to understand me, they will, and if not, well, just too bad. My husband came home from work. He wanted to tell how tough or whatever happened. He didn't try to tell in Latvian that hook is that and that knife is there. He said it in English because that's his everyday work. So I had to learn from him. Then there was the TV, there was the paper, and slowly. I know, I regret now, there are some times when I should have tried more to ask or what, and I lost information or friends when I was too damp to say something, but slowly it adds sentence to sentence in the end.
Right.
We bought from New York, there, the Latvian paper, we bought lots of Latvian fiction books. The Christmas, how we did, we still do. We have Christmas Eve is the holiest and the main thing. Never Christmas Day, but Christmas Eve.
When we were in Edmonton, and was determined to teach me Latvian, but there's some kind of a rolling R, which I still can't do, that he insisted I try to articulate, and all I could do is, my dad just got super frustrated. I started crying, and then I think he just sort of finally gave up. And to me, that was just great.
Everything, I'm Latvian, but I think I have the outer skin very much Canadian, because it's so many years. And with all the kids born here, except like at home, I cook like my mother cooked and what I always learned. So that much I am Latvian, that I haven't added nothing. To this day, I don't hang Christmas stockings because I never did as a child. I don't have any echo in my heart. So, you know, try to figure out who you are and what you are. I still that I, the life has been super good. Thank God nobody has been that sick and the kids have been doing all right. I would be really wrong blaming Canada about anything. The birch tree reminds me of Latvia more than anything, because here, like the trees and fields are way more with flowers. Mm-hmm. Maybe like when you go up in the mountains here in BC, you see more flowers. Our fields were wheat fields, had lots of red poppies and blue, more flowers. No, I'm happy about being even in Alberta instead of, well, I maybe wouldn't mind Ontario, but for climate, for looks, Winnipeg, Manitoba is so flat, I'd rather be in Alberta. I think it all starts, you know, where you work from the family at the bottom, my husband and his work. And we had a chance to, the main thing is the kids, it turned out all right that they had a chance to go to school, take what they want. That was maybe the foremost. I remembered when I had the exam, the citizenship exam. The judge looked how many kids and what they will do, and I said, well, our hope is that they go to university. And he said, good, good. Save the money for house. Car, we did mostly to Vancouver because my parents moved from here to Vancouver and my sister lived there. So there always had to go and see them. So we didn't travel really too much, neither to States or across Canada, because my parents were old and they wanted to see us and we had to go. So we know the road to Vancouver pretty well, through Jasper or what. That was our holiday usually.
Our biggest adventure in the vacation department, though, going to Vancouver, was going by train.
Old we CN didn't have car, we took the train. Mm-hmm. And for the ticket, you could have breakfast there.
We always had steak for breakfast.
Dad insisted to ask for steak, try to eat steak.
So getting around town was really, that's where Mr. Redotes and Dr. Lessons after a while and other people came into play. We got picked up and genetics professor at the U of A and probably had the most degrees of anybody in town. He had a plot in, where is it? I want to find that plot. On a nice hot summer day or whatever, spring day, we and that Mrs. Lessons were all out there.
Lived at the basement. In 52, when we came to Edmonton from Guelph.
You probably know that the Schnepps family became semi-famous because their son was playing in the NHL. That's pretty cool. But this is kind of good, you know, good times we had in those days, Mrs. Milgram.
2.5 summers there. Lovely summers. The scares I had that time, the boys went to Massey's and it was windy and the waves and everything, and they had that raft built with the barrels on each side. And I saw that in practically middle of the lake, and I thought that the boys, I raced over there, they were on the shore, and the wind had blown the float away. But the scare they gave me, that's where I get all the gray hair. And they were fooling around with the Massey's gun. I could hear the bullets going zoom, zoom, zoom. They could have shot anyone.
And somewhere along, it was boarded up. I got in trouble a couple of times, various things related to the old building, but one time there was some hole opened up in the foundation and one of my buddies was crawling in and somebody caught us, and so we had a vamoose. I was sent to an English, though it's a German-based congregation, Holy Trinity on 81st Avenue, just south of White Avenue. It's on 100th Street. So I walked there for Sunday school with my brother and sister. But school was the easiest part of it. We were only half a block from...
He said, you send to school and they'll go.
Go!
and poor dear,
well,
he didn't know what to do.
Funny, the bell rang. In those days, you know, you could hear the bell. Maybe they still do it around schools. All the kids trooped in and I was the last kid standing. in the corner of the schoolyard, just looking now at an empty schoolyard and this big building or else. So I guess I hung around for a little while and went back home and tried it again the next day. I think the next day I walked through the school door and I was standing in the hallway. Everybody had found themselves a place to go. Some teacher sort of took pity on me and
I don't know how the kids survived, really.
Yeah, exactly. Different traditions, I guess,
well,
different countries.
When back home, when I started school, nobody took me by the hand. You know, we had far to go, not just around the corner. But I guess it was your country, your people, you knew the teachers a little bit.
But this school I really have a lot of fond memories from, just because it was such a cool, ancient thing. One of my buddies got up on the roof, because everybody knew there was a mother load of softballs.